Actually, before I forget it, do any of you guys have an old iPhone you want to sell me?
I don't.
I got an Android phone. I would just
an iPhone.
I would rather buy an iPhone than take an Android phone for free.
That's exactly right.
Hello! Welcome to the CallCast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. I'm joined by three very attractive males. Alex Excelsior Heath is with us. Hey, Alex.
Hello.
I've got Buster Heine joining us as well. Buster?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, I'm fine, thank you. And King Caney, Leander Caney.
His Majesty Leander
His Majesty
Caney.
Himself. Welcome to the show, Leander.
Hey, guys.
Did you guys like how I called you all extremely attractive?
Yeah.
Your personal
self-esteem.
Wish it
was true.
I think it's true. Your personal self-esteem is very important to me. I want to thank Ting for sponsoring the show. Yes, new sponsor, Ting. Do you wish that you had a mobile carrier that wasn't just always trying to rip you off? And offered you fair prices and didn't have a bunch of weird stuff on your bill? Well, guess what? There's Ting. You could take your iPhone to Ting. You could take your Android to Ting. And if you head on over to cultcast.ting.com, you can check out just how much money you can save. And they say about 98% of people who join bring their mobile phone to Ting save money. So go check it out. Gentlemen, I'm going to be the only one that cares about this. Buster actually might. But I thought it'd be fun to start with this. So you know how we were just at CES last week and in Vegas, and we saw those little tiny game controllers, right?
Right.
There was the steel case Stratus. That was what it was called, correct?
Yeah.
And it was tiny. Buster, you saw it, right?
It was like the small as like a little pack of gum, you know?
Yeah.
Like
I mean, if you were an Oompa Loompa, it might be the perfect size game controller for you. But for those of us manly men, well, with large hands. It was kind of small.
Yeah, but aren't kids the size of Oompa Loompas?
Yeah, but that's implying that only kids play video games.
Well, you know.
Let's be honest. Kids isn't can't afford video games.
Isn't that the main demographic, though?
I don't know. I kind of wonder. I thought like the main demographic was people...
Giant,
20
sweaty
to 35.
Nerds. Yeah.
We're not all giant and sweaty. No, not giant.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, Sigma has announced, we were just talking about this, I don't know if we mentioned on the last show, but we wanted a full-size gaming controller. And Sigma, and I'm not sure if this is like the lens company Sigma, but they've announced a full-size M5 Bluetooth game controller for iOS devices. So the thing is modeled after the Xbox controller. It looks kind of like the Xbox 360 controller. And Sigma says it's aimed at serious gamers, and it's going to have two analog joysticks, two triggers, a D-pad, action buttons, 10-hour battery life. But here's the thing. It's $100.
Jeez.
$100.
Even my Xbox controller isn't that much.
My
man.
Xbox One controller isn't that much.
Bro, if I'm not...
Huh?
If I'm not going to spend more than $2 on an app, I'm certainly not buying $100.
That's actually a really great point. If your app, the game that you're playing costs like $3. But here's the thing also is, I don't know, you guys probably haven't seen the videos on YouTube. Microsoft released a bunch of videos on how much effort they went through to design the Xbox One controller. I mean, they went through like 200 iterations of this product.
Uh-huh. Only 200?
I seriously doubt Sigma went through that many.
And yeah, because Microsoft did all the work.
And so they're just like, hey, let's just kind of base off Microsoft design.
Exactly. Why bother when I
yeah, screw
Microsoft
it.
Already worked it out? Exactly.
That's like Samsung's philosophy. I think last year Samsung spent $800 on R&D because they already have it. Just head on over to an Apple store near you. That's conjecture, by the way. I don't know their R&D budget, so don't sue me, Samsung. But let's talk about China Mobile. Because, Leander, you were saying that this was very exciting to you, that we got to see Tim Cook on TV. I always love seeing Tim Cook on TV.
Hey, y'all.
And he was just in, like, the full Asian garb. He was wearing, like, a kimono and stuff when he was on television to respect the Asian customs. And he was talking about China Mobile or to China Mobile. Who can give us some more information on this?
Kimono. I think you're mixing up your Asian cultures.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Is that Japanese or Chinese? I think that's Japanese. Sorry.
Isn't he? Yeah. He probably was in like one of those blue suits they wear at Foxconn.
One of the blue suits?
On the lines. You know, the uniforms. The Chinese are big
on the uniforms. Oh, right. You mean like one of the production line?
Yeah, exactly. Like... That kind of updates on like the Chairman Mao, you know.
And he has like the little engineer hat on.
Right.
Yeah, that might have been it. But I guess apparently, I mean, the whole China Mobile deal is been important for them, obviously, because China's like their next big market. And Apple said they're receiving 60,000 iPhone pre-orders per day for the China market. And in a previous show, I know we mentioned the China deal, the China Mobile deal brought Apple 770 million potential new customers.
Yeah, the millionaire is kind of
770. Yeah, right. Leander, was it you or Buster, was it you that was talking about his appearance on television? I didn't catch it, so I'm hoping someone can tell us more about it.
I didn't catch it either. Did you see it, Buster?
I didn't actually see it. I just saw that he was on TV for China.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's very rare for Tim Cook to appear on TV, period, even in the U.S.
Right. Plus, traveling to China to make a deal with these guys is a big deal, too, because, you know, Jobs initiated this back in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But he never bothered to go out to China to, like, you know, seal the deal. And Cook's been out there. They've been negotiating for 6 years. And one report said that Cook has been out there 3 times already, you know, in the last few months.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's been out there quite a lot. And I kind of wonder if Steve Jobs were still alive, if he would be making as many trips out there.
No, he'd be sending Cook.
He'd be sending Tim Cook. Except we wouldn't be hearing about it as much. Tim Cook wouldn't really be in the spotlight, I don't think.
I think that's exactly what happened. I mean, he was dispatching Cook to go out there to negotiate. And, it's a big, big deal because, China is rapidly becoming the new Japan.
Yeah.
And there's a huge middle class. I mean, huge. And all the reports, it was really funny because, I mean, all the reports I read were saying, Apple's going to come up with a cheap, low-cost iPhone to compete in the Chinese market because all these Android handsets are a fraction of the price of the iPhone. And, thinking that this was going to have to be a big part of the package. But I don't think that's the case at all. I think they're going to sell every single iPhone 5S they can make in China and more.
That's really interesting, considering that they're made there for, you know, I don't know how much an iPhone costs to make, but obviously much less than it costs to sell.
Well, they don't subsidize them either on the Chinese carriers. So, I mean, these are like $800 to $1,000, I think, to buy one.
$800 to $1,000 yen?
Well, no, I mean, whatever the
equivalent is. Or actual dollars. Okay. I bet $800 to $1,000 yen is probably like $5.
They're pretty
expensive.
The exchange
rate.
they're pretty expensive.
Comparatively to the U.S. market?
How much are they more expensive than the U.S.? I mean, well, you know, in the U.S. they're subsidized over a 2-year contract.
Right.
So you probably end up paying actually more.
But up front, and you got to also take into account the culture. I mean, I know there's a rising middle class in China, but a lot of people can't afford really expensive phones.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. And this is what people are saying. But I looked at some numbers and they're saying that, you know, like already 25% of the Chinese population are so-called middle class.
Yeah,
and it's going to double in the next decade. Do you know that one statistic that I looked at that really surprised me was that already a third of all luxury goods, that is, you know, high-end handbags, shoes, watches, jewelry, cars, are sold to Chinese consumers, either domestically or abroad. A third.
Wow.
It's incredible.
Go ahead, Leander.
Well, I think people have this impression that China is full of, you know, it's still a poor country, but it's rapidly, rapidly becoming a middle-class country.
Hmm. Well, it seems like just because there are so many people, I mean, they're able to consume all those luxury goods or higher-end goods, but still also have a giant population that is really impoverished, you know, that don't live in the big cities yet. So they're kind of a huge mix between the two. But certainly in the big cities... people are making a much higher wage.
Right, and there's a lot of them, too. I mean, there's a lot of big industrial cities in China.
Totally side fact. I saw – do you guys ever see that image on Reddit where somebody was living in a high-rise tower and the pollution had come in And I forget what Chinese city he was living in, but it was so bad that he couldn't even see more than about 10 to 12 feet from his window. It was just pure yellow.
No.
Gosh, man. The factories are cranking out the pollution over there for sure.
I saw a different image. It was like from the space station, and you could actually like see the yellow smoke over like the entire valleys and like how the mountains were like keeping some of it in, like from going up to Mongolia and stuff too.
I read on Reddit, so you know this is true.
Of course.
That like 25% of San Francisco's pollution comes from China.
Huh.
Just what? By fact of the fact, just by fact of that the world true. Churns. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, dude, did you hear the first part that I said? I read it on Reddit.
On Reddit. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like when you deny that it's truth, it just makes you look bad. apparently, Tim Cook said this is a watershed moment for Apple, and the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the deal between Apple and China Mobile is not going to just be limited to handsets, but will involve broader cooperation between the two companies. So iPads, MacBook Pros, what have you.
Yeah, watches and TV, iWatches, wearables.
Yeah, maybe some cool iWatches and stuff for them. Any case, kind of cool to think about. Apple's growing like insanely fast, and it's interesting to think that their new big market is going to be in China, not so much here in the U.S., where everyone, including all Leander's seven children, all have iPhones already. So they got to look elsewhere to make
saturated
revenue.
Yeah.
Although your son's helping because he keeps losing them. So
exactly, yeah, he's keeping them alive.
They're Apple's favorite customers. They just keep losing them. Let's talk about Nest, shall we?
Oh, yeah.
Big news this week that really surprised me. Google bought Nest. What was it, for $3.2 billion?
Yeah.
We've talked about Nest before on this show. Nest, of course, is that smart thermostat that has really kind of changed the way people think about, you know, heating your home. I mean, before, those appliances were just really stupid. You just put them on the wall and they're really simple. But the Nest learns when you're home and can adjust the temperature based on algorithms. And so Google bought the company. Tony Fadell is the CEO, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So ex-Apple employee. And apparently there's like 100 other ex-Apple employees working at Nest.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so lots of Apple engineers. What's that?
Because Fadell, brought a lot over with him, poached a lot back.
I was surprised that some people thought this was a good deal. Some people thought this was a bad deal. My immediate impression was this is a bad deal for us. I don't know why I feel that way. I couldn't articulate it to you.
It's how people feel about Google in general. People are like everyone is always like, oh, Google, privacy. They're going to control my thermostat without me knowing, or they're going to, you know, cause a fire or, you know, something like that.
It's got a motion sensor, so they're going to be tracking you as you
They're gonna track me or let me die from carbon monoxide because I don't click on their ads enough. Like that's what everyone thinks of Google, and I don't understand.
Well, my biggest fear is they're going to make you log into Google Plus on your Nest. It's just another way for them to push Google Plus.
Share your Nest settings.
They're like, do you want to turn up your temperature? Please log into Google Plus and share your temperature settings with the five people that you don't know or in your circles, whatever those are.
Well, they turn down the temperature if you're not clicking enough ads, right? Because you're getting too lethargic and you're getting sleepy, so they chill it up a bit, get you moving.
I don't know. How do you guys feel about Google buying Nest? And why do you think they would want Nest? Because I honestly, the more I think about it, it's a little confusing to me as to why they would even want this company.
It's really clear. But anyway, what do you other guys think?
You know, I guess I expected them to go it alone for a little while longer. So I was kind of surprised that they've already sold and that it's for $3.2 billion. So that was pretty crazy. But as far as Google buying it, I think that could be awesome because it gives a lot of access to Google's services and manpower to make it even like more products faster. So I think it could help them innovate a lot quicker.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what Tony Fadell was saying. They get the resources now to fulfill this dream of this conscious home.
It'll be interesting to see how it fits with like the Google brand and all that, but it sounded like they were just going to let Nest operate on its own for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so. Right. Yeah, yeah. Well, what about you, Alex?
I agree with Buster. I think, well, and Fadell said that in his comments that it's about the, you know, they have the infrastructure now to support what they want to do. And I mean, they're doing, you know, it's not totally ridiculous, right? Because they were invested in by Google Ventures early on, mm-hmm. and Sergey's been courting them, you know, from the very beginning. So it's not like it totally comes out of left field. And I mean, besides Apple, who else would even be able to buy them?
But I want to, why would Apple buy them, though?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we talked about why is Google buying them? And then we were kind of, why would Apple need to buy them either?
Well, if they want the IP or they want the talent back to do home automation, I don't know. There's probably some bad blood there. But it's the same argument for, like, why doesn't Apple buy Square or something like that? Just because a product is Apple-like and works really well and seems like it could fit well inside Apple doesn't mean that Apple wants it.
And has all their ex-employees.
Right.
Yeah, right. Get them all back. Aleander, I want to hear what you think. I know that you've been gracious and let everyone else kind of speak their mind. But before we do that, before we hear what you have to say, I just want to give a shout-out to Ting. Go to cultcast.ting.com. Check out how much money you guys can save with Ting. You guys know, if you've been listening for a while to this show, I don't like getting screwed by telecoms. I don't like it. And just for instance on how much money you can save with Ting, AT&T charges me $40 per line for my plan. So every device or every smartphone that I add, they charge me $40. Ting charges $6 to add a new line. They're much less expensive than most other carriers, and they say 98% of people who switch to Ting would save money. And you can actually go to cultcast.ting.com. They have a saving money calculator that you can click on, and you can kind of like customize your plan and then show them or tell them who your current carrier is and how much you pay. You can even log in and they'll import that information. And they'll show you how much you can save with Ting. And the reason is because Ting has a philosophy I really like. They just don't want to screw with people. They want to be really honest and straightforward. There's never any hidden fees or weird fees on your bill. And they offer these bucketed plans that you can select from. So, for instance, when you go to their rates, they offer text messaging packages, minutes packages, megabyte packages. And then you can pick the different minute plans that you want, the different messages that you want, the megabytes that you want. You could even not have minutes or messages. So you could choose just their large size megabyte plan. So everything is kind of bucketed out by small, medium, large, extra large, so on and so forth. So if you wanted to just get 1,000 megabytes a month of data, you could pay $24 a month and not get any minutes, any messages. And your bill would be significantly cheaper than with most other carriers because they don't even let you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the cool thing is if you have a bunch of people on your plan, like Leander does, where he's got like 12 people, if you wanted to give your kid a really inexpensive flip phone, it would only cost you $6 for that line. So even if you didn't use it, it wouldn't really matter. And everyone can share from the same data pools that you choose for your plan. Mm-hmm. So go check it out. It's cultcast.ting.com. Use the calculator to figure out how much you'd save. And if you decide to sign up, that would be awesome. You'll save $25 off a new device purchase. By the way, no contracts. And if you have your own device, you could bring that to Ting as well. They're on the Sprint network, so it would have to be compatible with the Sprint network. And you'll get a $25 service credit. So go check them out. I appreciate Ting sponsoring the show. I love having carriers that just don't screw people.
Yeah.
Because I feel like most of them do. With exception of maybe two.
It's cool how everything's changing now, isn't it? I mean, some of the carriers are really starting to get, you know, much more customer-friendly plans.
Yeah, they are. In fact, Ting's T-Mobile. One of them. T-Mobile is another one, right, where they're really kind of trying to not be like all the other carriers. But
right, it's shaking it up, definitely, because it's making all the other carriers change, too, in response.
Well, I really hope that it does, because when you have a company where you can be so flexible and have your monthly bill actually be reasonable, I would imagine people or the other carriers are going to be like, okay, we actually have to do something to raise our customers.
And they're charging you for what you use, not for what, you know, you might potentially use.
Well, that's exactly the thing with Ting is they're just charging you for what you actually use.
Right. So, it's a lot better. A lot more customer centric.
Yeah. A lot more customer service centered as well. So anyway, back to Nest. Leander, you never offered your thoughts.
Right.
What do you think about the Nest deal, Google deal?
Well, you know, the question was, is it like, why does Google want this company? And there's a lot of paranoid stuff about they're going to, you know, like Alex's paranoid weird fantasies about them.
That's kind of his MO, though. Weird paranoid fantasies.
Tracking you in your home and stuff. And, you know, all the data mining they're going to be doing. And they're going to be, you know, they're going to be like, it allows Google to have a presence with all these sensors offline. You know, so they can track what you're doing offline as well as on.
You know they're going to do that, though.
Yeah.
You know they're going to do that.
They definitely will, because they do a lot of data mining. And this is like, but it's the secondary thing. And I think, you know, it's really kind of clear. I mean, the Internet of Things, we're starting to see a lot more smarts come into all these different devices. Smart thermostats, smart car alarms. And Google's already investing in a lot of, you know, things like smart cars, robot cars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're trying to get into the smartphone business. And I think it's... one of the interesting things that Fidel said about the Internet of Things, about these online services, is that you have to have a device in order for people to adopt it. Like, people aren't going to buy some kind of nebulous cloud service. What they want to do is they want to buy a gadget. They want to buy something concrete, some hardware that brings the service with it. And I mean, I heard the same thing from this from Live, which is like, I think, probably the most underhyped company from CES last week. And this is another Apple alumni, right? Tim Bucher, who has a service for managing all your photographs across all your devices. And it does away with the fact that you have to actually manage your pictures anymore, your videos. So it automatically sucks up all the pictures from your iPhone, your computer, your Android device, if you have one, and stores them in the cloud. And make sure that there's always enough space to take more pictures on whatever, you know, on whatever device you're using. And it's really a cloud service. But he said, but they built this box, a little box that you put in your house with a really beautiful Android, with a touch interface. And it looks just like Nest. Mm-hmm. So on the screen, it shows you like a little green leaf to reassure you that all your pictures are all backed up across all multiple devices and everything's A-okay with the service. And you can flip through it and you can see your pictures and you can see how much, you know, pictures you've got on each device and where they were taken. But he said the device itself was kind of superfluous. They didn't really need to build it, but no one would buy it unless they did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I thought it was a brilliant piece of consumer psychology.
So he was trying to sell software as a service, but no one would buy it. So he realized he had to make a piece of hardware in order to sell this service.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And so you buy this box and it seems like a repository for all your pictures, but it's actually really, you don't really need it to get the service.
Mm-hmm.
So
are you saying that you think Google's buying Nest so that they're going to get us to use some more of their software? I mean, or their
Well, you know, Google's trying to get into all this. You know, they're trying to, you know, they want to digitize, you know, the entire world's knowledge.
Yeah.
So their ambitions are really huge. But, you know, I think what they're doing is they're seeing that, you know, like their main services are selling ads through through the desktop browser.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going away. Mm-hmm. The Internet is becoming mobile. And dumb, you know, it's going into all the Internet is powering all of these devices, regular devices. And I think a lot of companies look at it like they think, you know, they're going to add intelligence to something. But what it really takes is an entirely new device to totally rethink the whole paradigm of whatever it is, you're looking at. So with thermostats, you know, I mean, I guess that, you know, the thermostat they invented isn't much like old thermostats. It's an entirely new device. And I don't think they've even really rolled out all the features. But anyway, that's another thing. Google's getting into this. You know, like it wants to be. It's seeing that the Internet is moving away from the desktop and into the much more mobile device-centric universe, and they want to be there.
Couldn't this also be about the fact that Google is trying to turn into a devices company, and they just bought a company with 100 ex-Apple employees who obviously knows how to execute and build really great hardware.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, can you think of how many Google products, like hardware products they've released, which have just absolutely sucked? I mean, the Chromecast is the first product that they've released that has actually been pretty good. There's been a whole slew of phones that have really been bad. Do you guys remember the Google, what was the television product that they released before?
Google.
Oh, right. Yeah, that was, yeah.
We can't even remember the name. It was that bad.
All speaker media center, too.
Right.
Yeah, Google has had a major problem with releasing hardware that people actually want to spend their money on. So maybe for them, this is a talent acquisition.
It is, yeah, totally. But I think also, you know, like Apple, I think, is setting the agenda. It's very much about owning the entire stack, you know, the hardware, the software, and the services.
Mm-hmm.
And Android, you know, that... you know, I think Google's purchase of Motorola was like a an acknowledgement of that. They can't put all their eggs in that one basket. They, you know, this the sort of Microsoft model of having one person do the software and another company doing the services and another one doing the hardware doesn't work in this sort of much more tightly integrated universe.
Yeah, you had a post, Leander, on this about Fidel and some of the bad blood there and with Ive. And could you explain that? Is that another angle, you think, for why they would go with Google?
Yeah, you know, I think from Fidel's point of view, yeah, you know, Apple is probably not the best home for him because of the bad blood with Ive. I mean, it was battling with Ive that got him removed from the company in the first place.
What was their main disagreement about?
They fought about everything.
Personality stuff?
Yeah. You know, Fidel was one of the hardware engineers. He was on the hardware engineering side. And the ID team, they're the ones with the real power. Johnny Ive's group, the industrial design group, call all the shots in Apple. Mm-hmm. And whatever they say goes. And so he was fighting. Whenever, you know, Ive would come to him and says, we want stainless steel, you know, unobtainium screws that no one can see that are invisible on the back, on the front of this thing, you know, then Fidel would say, you're crazy, and you know, would kick up a huge fight. And he was going to Steve Jobs and complaining about Ive and his unrealistic design demands. And
oh, Jobs, bad move.
Right, I know.
Bad move.
And even though he was one of Jobs' key lieutenants, I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, Johnny Ive is more important. So
I'm sure at some point Steve Jobs just told him that. Listen, Johnny Ive is more important than you are.
Yep.
We just need you to understand that.
Well, plus, you know, Forster was fighting as well, and, you know, I mean, there was a lot of fighting amongst those guys. But
do we have any information on whether Apple was interested in buying Nest? I mean, was there an interest there? Because it does seem like a natural fit, right? I mean, this product is a very Apple-esque type product.
They said they didn't even try to outbid Google, so
but
didn't
were they
sound
bidding?
Like Apple. No, it okay. sounded like Apple wasn't interested in it.
Wow.
Huh. I think Apple could get it. You know, it's a tiny little. I mean, they said that. $3.2 billion. I mean, it's a lot of money to you and me, but it's not a lot of money to Apple.
Google. Yeah, we're Apple.
Or Google, yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that Jobs said when he came back, you know, one of the reasons for Apple's success was focus. And focus was saying no to a whole bunch of good ideas and yes just to a couple of, you know, the best ones. And they've already got their plate full, you know, with selling iPhones and iPads, which is the sort of controlling platform for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the Nest is really only kind of useful if you use it with the Nest app, which
it is
runs
kind of
on
a
the
niche
iPhone
project
or iPad.
Too, right? I mean, how many people are going to buy a Nest for their house?
Well, you know, it may eventually everything is going to be smart, right? Everything will be connected. That's for sure. But you know, they can. I think they're more interested in having a platform than they are having individual products.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. You know, Nest is very Apple-like. What was clever about it was like it was kind of like the iPod of thermostats and the smoke alarm too and whatever else they'll come out with. You know, they're wrapping a service into an easy-to-use gadget.
I really want a Nest, actually. I don't have one, but I would love to have one.
Yeah, you know, it's not that exciting, to be honest.
You know, it doesn't excite you?
Well, I have one, and I put it, and I was kind of, you know, curious to play around with it, and I put it in because the kids were always cranking the thermometer up to like 95 degrees,
mm-hmm.
and so the heater was going all night and all day,
mm-hmm.
and the Nest has a passcode lock on it,
uh-huh.
so I got that just to lock the kids out of the thermostat, and you know, and that works well enough, but. You know, the auto away stuff is kind of cool, but you're away, so you don't notice when it's not on.
But you notice the money that you save.
Well, maybe. I mean, it's a little bit. It hasn't, you know, totally changed everything in, you know, terms of home climate control.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little bit cooler.
Literally.
It was nice, actually. You know, my brother said the heat when we went away for a week.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, into Lake Tahoe. My brother said the heating was on for some reason. But when I checked it, it said auto away was on. So the heating shouldn't have been on. So I turned it off just to double check. And that worked. I mean, I guess that's kind of cool. But
I think for me, the Nest represents, and you said this earlier, just the internet connectivity of all things, you know, and how cool is, just at CES, how we're seeing this everywhere now and how you could have like a mobile command center right from your iPhone, right, where you'll be able to control your house's heating, turn your TVs on and off, start your BMW i3 and roll down the windows. It's like, it just feels cool to be able to do all this stuff right from your iPhone. And the next 2 to 3 years, I think, are going to be even more exciting in that regard. Because you're just going to be able to control, everything is going to be controlled by your iPhone.
Yeah, I know.
And also
by
Google, and then also by the NSA.
That's exactly right.
Hey, let's wrap up with this, guys. So apparently Aaron Sorkin has finally written the script for his, I was going to say much anticipated. I don't know if that's true. His Steve Jobs biopic.
It could be cool.
I think it's going to be cool because I believe in Aaron Sorkin.
I believe in The Newsroom.
I haven't seen that.
It's like the worst show ever.
It's the worst?
It's not a great HBO show, right, Alex?
Oh, it's not?
No. It's like the show everyone it's like the show everyone loves to hate. Like, people watch it and they're like, "Oh, this is the worst show ever."
Yeah, I mean, they're canceling it after its third season now, so.
It's an HBO show?
Yeah.
And they're canceling it?
Yeah. Isn't it just like really boring?
I've only watched like a couple episodes and it wasn't that entertaining, so I never came back to it.
But Olivia Munn's in it. Olivia Munn.
Is she?
That's what I heard. I haven't seen it.
That's probably why it's awful.
Aaron Sorkin said his movie will be structured in, this is in 2012, he said this, by the way, in 3 30-minute acts, each of which will play out in real time. Each act will show Steve Jobs backstage at different moments in, at different Apple keynotes.
That's an interesting way to approach it, isn't it?
I think it should start with him giving the pitch about the iPod.
It kind of reminds me of like a Quentin Tarantino style of like dividing a film into almost theater like acts where you have really long dialogue heavy scenes. And it sounds like it's something that Sorkin does. It's something he likes to do as well. So it sounds like it's going to be a very different, more serious take on it, obviously, than
Jobs,
the Kitchenators with Macklemore in the background.
I think Macklemore should be Steve Wozniak. Let's just take it all the way. We could get Justin Timberlake to play one of the investors. Let's just get the all-star cast.
Play Jobs though? Daniel Day-Lewis.
I think that would be a good pick.
Yeah,
that would be. I don't know if he would do it. But
I think Christian Bale could do it.
Joaquin Phoenix with a beard.
I don't know if Joaquin Phoenix could do it.
What about Stanley Tucci?
I don't even know who that is.
No way.
Oh, he's great.
There's no way he could do Jobs.
Tucci, man. He's hilarious.
He's a short, pudgy guy.
Doesn't matter. They got camera effects.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you could do Tom Cruise and just stand in a box.
Yeah.
I think Stanley Tucci could do it. Wow. I'm looking at him now.
If Ashton Kutcher can do it, Stanley Tucci can.
Well, you made a pretty big claim right there.
Well, I mean, considering Ashton Kutcher got a Razzie for his role, it's not going to be part top.
I don't even know what a Razzie is. So he got nominated for a
Razzie. Razzies are like the annual, like they have the Oscars, and then on the other side of the spectrum is the Razzie, like the worst movies of the year. And it's been going for like 34 years straight, and this year Ashton Kutcher was nominated for a Razzie as like worst male actor for his role as Jobs.
Oh my gosh.
when did they give the awards out?
I didn't see that part.
I'm bringing it up right now. It doesn't say when the date is. Oh, they'll be handed out on March 1st. one day before the Academy Awards. Let's see here.
Is he in good company?
He is in good company. I guess Will Smith Jaden was nominated Smith. Was Jaden nominated for After Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Gere and Halle Berry were nominated for Anthology? Oh, huh. Movie 43? I have no idea what that even is.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, a Madea Christmas. That would be Tyler Perry. So, yeah, he's in good company, man. Man, that movie.
I think this could definitely be something Daniel Day-Lewis would do. If the right people are involved and it gets the right director, Sorkin's writing it, he's already won Oscars, Sony's funding it, so it'll have a huge budget. I could totally see Daniel Day-Lewis doing it.
You know what I would love to see is, like, just have him go in a totally different direction, like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter direction, where Steve Jobs is actually a crime fighter and the entire Apple company is just a front, and he's like the CEO and he's really rich, but then he uses all this money to fight crime. That's the movie I want to see. Steve Jobs, Night Ninja.
Not with Daniel Day-Lewis. You won't get that.
There's the title. That's what you need to go with right there.
Well, there was that one time in Japan or something where he got like pulled over for having ninja stars in his trunk.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the guy's switching cars every 6 months, right?
Yeah.
Dude, he's totally a night ninja.
Steve Jobs was a spy movie.
Oh, yeah. He could totally be a spy. Espionobs. No, that wouldn't work. Espionobs. That's a whole different genre.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I bet Leander's seen that movie, though.
I'm talking does not write.
Anyway, let's wrap it up there, guys. I can't think of a better way to wrap it up than Espionobs. In fact, I think we may have just found our title. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. We would love it if you would come hang out with us on Twitter and talk to us in sweet tweets. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N, Leander's L. Caney, Buster's B-S-T-3-R, Alex's Alex E. Heath, and of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys on the streets at night in our ninja outfits. I think I would carry a bow.
All right, I get dibs on nunchucks.
Actually, that was a better pick. That pick's definitely better than mine.
This is more fearsome, you know.
We can give Alex the sigh. Doesn't he look like a sigh guy?
Yeah, he does.
What you munching on, Buster?
Some Portillo's hot dogs and a cake shake.
Oh, man, do I love hot dogs.
Yeah.
Chili dogs are one of the few foods that look exactly the same on the way in as they do on the way out.
Oh, yeah.
I think
sometimes they look better on the way out.
I think we should take a moment to appreciate that.